lose you. So I'm going to ask you to interrupt me at any time that I say something you don't understand or something you don't believe. I want you to interrupt, because I'd rather handle the questions as we go along, and I will stay. We'll stop promptly at 4:30. That's a lie. I may not do that. I may just go right on. But I will stay as long as someone wants to stay and visit. I will be here. I have a ticket to the preacher's elders luncheon, but as you can see, I don't need to eat, so I'll be happy to stay and visit as long as anybody wants to visit. So, I do believe that what we're embarked on and what we're talking about does have a spiritual emphasis, does have a spiritual background and meaning to all that we do, because all that we have does not belong to us, it belongs to someone who gave it to us. And it is a matter of what are we going to do with what it is that he's given us. And so it is not ours. We've already talked about stewardship. Stewardship not only of a little bit of our current income, but stewardship of the things we leave behind. Gaston Welburn and Charles Trevathan today talked to us about wills, the importance of wills, the place of a will in estate planning. They answered questions about that. We want to talk this hour about some practical suggestions or practical aspects of how can you do that. Where do you begin? We've talked about it. Now, where do I start? Or if I've already started, do I need to start over? And do some of the things that we're talking about. The handout that you have in your hand will basically cover some of the slides that we're going to talk about. Handouts are in the back. Here's some more up here if we need them. It's this handout. It looks a little bit like this. So if you do not have one, you want to have one of those in hand. Make notes on it if you'd like. Scratch on it. Again, stop me at any time. We may want to turn a couple of lights out because that's where we're going to begin. It's right here on the board out at the very beginning. If we can get it focused. Can you see that okay? If not, we'll turn out another light or two. I believe that proper planning, proper estate planning, proper financial planning, you can accomplish many, many things. Number one, through proper planning, many benefits are available not only to the individuals, to you personally, when you take the time to plan, but also to your family, those that you will ultimately one day leave behind. But also through planning, you can do some tremendous things with closely held family corporations. We're not going to be able to get into that today, I don't think, but just take my word for it that it's available. Sometimes, not always, when planning takes place, there's a lot of good things that can take place for charitable organizations. Planning can help you avoid or bypass capital gains tax. We talked about that last session. What is capital gains tax? Capital gains tax is a tax that the government charges you on the profit or the capital appreciation when you sell a highly appreciated asset. For example, a block of stock, a piece of land, something that you bought several years ago, it has appreciated in value, you turn around and sell it, make a profit over a period of time, the government wants a part of that profit, a part of that capital appreciation. So hence we have something called a capital gains tax. Today's rate is 28%. So there are ways in which through planning we can avoid or bypass capital gains tax. We can increase our current income. I've had the privilege of working with some people in Highland Park. Any of you know where Highland Park is? Does that mean anything? That's a pretty good zip code in Dallas if you live in Highland Park. But there are people that bought homes there a number of years ago, maybe paid $30,000 for their home. It's paid for. The house would sell today for $700,000-$800,000. And the taxes and insurance are more than their original house payment. They could use additional income. So we're going to be looking at some ways in which we can increase and sometimes increase our current income. Reduce federal estate taxes. We talked earlier about the difference between income taxes, federal estate taxes. State taxes we pay at death, income taxes we pay during life. So we're going to talk about ways to reduce and in some cases, sometimes, eliminate federal estate tax. And as a result of doing all that, we'll be able to conserve the assets for those we love. Those we love may be a Christian university or college. It may be a child care agency. It may be caring for the elderly. It could be a lot of things. Don't let these numbers scare you. Otherwise, I'm going to lose you from the very beginning. Do you remember I said last session that I assume everybody's wealthy until I can prove otherwise? That's exactly what I'm assuming here. Now, this is an estate of $1 million. This is a list of assets. In the back, before you leave, one of the things that you need to do for yourself is pick up something that the university is providing for you free of charge, call your personal estate planning record. Pick that up and make a list of all of your assets. It asks you the right questions in order to help you come to grips with what it is God has blessed you with. If you begin to try to make a list on your own, I dare say you're going to leave off something. One thing that most people leave off in their estate planning, and as far as tax planning is concerned, is life insurance. Because life insurance agents have told us, and rightly so, your life insurance is not taxable. Isn't that right, Nick? Life insurance is not taxable. That is true for income tax purposes. When death occurs and someone collects on a life insurance policy, the face value of that policy is not subject to a dime of income tax. But what about federal estate tax? If you have any incidence of ownership in that policy, it is a part of your federal estate tax liability. That's the 37 to 55% we talked about earlier. It's added to the top. It's part of your taxable estate. So include the face value of your life insurance policy when you put down a record of your assets. Well, this is a typical couple. This is a couple that I have worked with. Now, the names have been changed to protect the guilty. But this is Mr. and Mrs. Ben E. Factor. Benefactor. You don't get the play on that. Okay. Yes, you did. You just didn't want to laugh. This is a list of their assets. Their home, their land, the lake lot, some stocks, some cash, some savings, some personal property, a retirement plan, and life insurance, $50,000 life insurance. All of it totals up to $1 million. This couple is 65. Husband and wife, both 65. You see what they paid for it over here? This is important. When you begin to do some planning, what did I pay for it? When did I buy it? What is its current value? And what is its current yield? Do you see some assets on here that aren't doing too well? Well, we're going to take a look at a couple of those. There's some stock in there, earning 2%. There's some land there, not doing too well either. Now, it's appreciated in value, but it's not generating the kind of income that you would normally like to have at retirement, or that you would like for your surviving spouse to have at retirement. But why do we not sell? What about that piece of land there? There's a piece of land, $10,000 we paid for it a number of years ago. Current value today, the interstate is going by it or something, I don't know, but the value is $250,000 today. Maybe a grass lease or something on it is earning 2%. But the couple didn't want to sell it. Why? Capital gains tax. $240,000 of capital gain times the tax rate of 28% is a pretty hefty tax. Thank you. I'll just hold on to it. Well, let's see where we found this couple. This is their $1 million estate. Right up at the top, $1 million. Gaston mentioned to you earlier today that we live in Texas. It's a community property state. There are 8 community property states in the United States. Texas is one of them. I know that we've got some people here from Nebraska. That's a common law property state. I used to rattle off the names of all of them, but there are only 8 community property states. But with the unlimited marital deduction and the way the tax laws are currently put together, the estate can very easily be divided evenly so that there is no gift tax, no federal estate tax at the first death. So we want to just continue to think in terms of Dad owns half, Mom owns half. This $1 million estate. This is where I don't want to lose you. Take a zero off of this if you want to, if it makes you feel better. Some of you, like Brother Woodard, you may want to add a zero on there. I don't know. But just don't let the numbers bother you. What we're looking at here is a concept, okay? We're developing a practical concept for estate planning. Over the years, I've worked with a lot of couples, Christian couples. Would you believe that Christian people lie? I have sat down and said, now this is what happens with a simple will. I assume you have a will. Husband is sitting there, yes we do. And the wife is turning looking like this, we what? They never signed it. Or it's in their mind, as Gaston talked about earlier. They have a mindset, it was something that we always wanted to do, we planned to do, but we never got around to doing. But this couple and the of people that have an estate plan or have a will today, 80% of it is just like this. It's called a mom and pop will, a simple will. I love you will, mirror will, that says, Dad says, if I die first, what? What do we normally say? You tell me. I want to give it to the wife. And at the wife's death, what? We'll give it to the children. And what does the wife say in a reciprocal will? Same thing. Same two-page document. Well, if I die before husband, then I give it to him, and the surviving spouse now owns this, the separate property. And at his death, it goes to the family. Now, I'm going to throw something out here. Don't shoot me before we get started. What is happening in a lot of times, and it's what has happened to some of you. What happens if all of a sudden, it happened in my family just recently. My father-in-law died at the age of 68 of a brain tumor last September 1st. Left behind a lovely bride. She is a good-looking woman. I do not anticipate, and if she were here, I wouldn't say this. And I know some of you here that know her, and you better not go tell her I said this. But I anticipate that someday she's going to remarry. I cannot picture this lovely woman, this lovely Christian lady, living the rest of her life at age 64, and if she knew I told you her age, she'd shoot me. The rest of her life alone. Now suppose my father-in-law had left her something like this. And she finds someone, and she remarries. What happens to this? All of a sudden, who owns a part of this? What if he has children? What if he brings children into the marriage? And they commingle this property, and that's important, but over a period of time, they commingle it. And suppose she predeceases him, second husband. His children get half of this. Possibility. So a simple will is not always the answer. Not always. It could be the very answer for you. Just throw that out. Also, these numbers will not make sense. You notice they're getting bigger? Where is all that coming from? These numbers are getting bigger because we're growing this estate of $1 million at 4% annually. And you say, that's a lot of money, 4%. Let me tell you, I was with a guy not too long ago at a dinner. Well, it was Pat Robertson. And I don't think he did the research himself, but he had someone do it. He said, if we took the money, the 30 pieces of silver that Judas betrayed Jesus for in AD 33 and put it in the First National Bank of Jerusalem, how much would that be worth today if it compounded at 4%? Have any idea? In 1980, there would be enough money to give every man, woman, and child in the United States $350,000 apiece. Never underestimate the power of compounding money. How many of you are worth more today than you were 20 years ago? Almost every one of us. So don't think in terms of, well, that couldn't happen. I couldn't own an estate of $1 million. You live long enough, no telling what your assets will be worth. If you're still in control of your faculties and still in control of yourself, compounding of money, the appreciation and value of properties, unless you've got one piece of property maybe in Odessa or some downtown property in Dallas right now. This illustrates the growth of this estate at 4%. Arthur Anderson, one of the Big Eight accounting firms, uses 6 to 8% in the estate growth when they do their projections. So we're being very conservative in a 4% growth factor in this estate. This couple, both 65, have a 24-year life expectancy. So let's just do some projections. Here we are in 1989 when they have a simple will. First estate, usually the husband, Gaston was right this morning, the husband is usually the first to die. He passes it to surviving spouse. This becomes her separate property. It's growing at the rate of 4% annually. The national average of settling an estate, probate, administrative costs, final expenses, funeral expenses, etc., is 5%. That is the number that's reflected in your copy that you have. And that's where we're going to differ in what you see on this board and what you have in your hand. I'm using about a 3%, which is closer to what is realistic here in Texas. So we have probate and administrative cost and other things. Probate cost is very, very small part of that, almost nil. And a lot of people do not like to go through this process because they're afraid of that big bear probate. Very small cost in Texas. Because of the unlimited marital deduction, there is no federal estate tax at the first death. Mom and dad can pass back and forth. Husband and wife can pass back and forth to each other, either during life or at death, any amount of money and pay no tax no matter what state you live in. It's called the unlimited marital deduction. The husband can give it all to the wife. The wife can give it all back to the husband any number of times. Pay no gift tax, no inheritance tax during life or at death. So now the surviving spouse, after the husband has predeceased his wife, the surviving spouse now has $2,000,002. But yes, question. The husband and wife, because of the unlimited marital deduction, which came into existence in 1981, September the 12th, can pass back and forth to each other during life or at death and pay no federal estate tax, was the statement. That takes into consideration the $600,000. It's above and beyond that. Anything you want to do between husband and wife. If this were $10 million, or right here, $500 million apiece. Husband can give it all to wife. Wife can give it all to husband. They can trade it back and forth any number of times so long as they're married. Pay no gift tax on the transfers, no inheritance tax if they do it at death, at the first death. No, sir. You just pass it back and forth. You made a gift, back and forth, husband and wife, unlimited marital deduction. No tax. Surviving spouse, and a lot of people say, because there's no tax, then that's what I ought to do. The husband has said, I don't have to pay any tax when I give this to my wife when I die. Or vice versa. If she dies first, I give it to the husband. There's no tax. That's true. No tax. Now the surviving spouse has $2,000,002. Remember, it's growing at the rate of 4% a year. Compounding of money. Eventually, the surviving spouse passes. There's the cost again. Your chart will show 5%. This indicates 3%. And there's the tax, $808,000. Your chart indicates $771,000, probably. This illustration, $808,000, leaving for the family $1,641,000. Now, there'll be a test in about 5 minutes. And if you can't remember this, write it down. I'm going to ask you, how much does the family get under a simple will? What's the answer? $1,641,000. Now, there's nothing in this other than just a little bit better stewardship. But here we have the same estate, right up at the top, $1 million. Gaston talked about this. It's on the last item of his outline on wills. We have the same estate, $1 million. Husband owns half, wife owns half. But the husband says, you remember Gaston talking about the exemption equivalent, the $600,000? The husband says, I want to give all of this to my surviving spouse, but I'm going to give it to her in trust. Now, she can invade that. She can have some of the corpus. We understand the difference between corpus and income, or principal and income. She can have that principal if she needs it to maintain her current standard of living, health, education, etc. But I'm giving it to her in trust, credit, shelter, trust, credit, shelter, trust. I give it to her in trust, and I want to fund that trust with the maximum amount allowed by law at the date of my death, the maximum amount that you can avoid tax on in the future. Gaston shared with us this morning is $600,000. Now, the Congress would like to lower this to $400,000. There's even been talk of moving it down to $275,000. Question, Nick? Same as a bypass trust. Yes and no. This is the family trust. It's known as a family trust or a bypass trust. It's different than the old AB trust. It's an exemption equivalent trust, credit shelter trust. This is what usually the attorneys will know it as a credit shelter. We shelter it from any future taxes. Remember, husband and wife can give to each other during life or at death any amount, pay no tax. But they also have the $600,000 and pay no tax if they do what? Shelter it. So we shelter it. Anything from this estate, it's growing at the rate of 4%. Anything that's left over that will not fit into this shelter trust, this bypass trust, we might want to consider putting into something that you clean your ears with. Q-tip. Qualified terminable interest property. What does that say? That basically says that the husband says that the wife can have the income from this. She can invade it and get some of this money if she needs it. But when the wife is through with it, then it's going to go to my family. I will control the ultimate distribution of it by will through the trust. Now, you may want to relinquish that to the wife. But the wife now has income from this trust, income from this trust, and now has her separate property. When the surviving spouse dies, we are now dealing only with this side over here. When the surviving spouse dies, only this portion is subject to a tax and cost. This is subject to some tax, but no cost. This is not subject to a dime of cost or tax. It passes. We have forever sheltered it. What if this grows and it gets bigger than $600,000? What if it grows to $700,000, $800,000? That's okay. Whatever this is worth, when the wife dies, it passes tax-free and cost-free to the family. No future tax. This is added to the wife to compute the tax, but what does she get also? An exemption equivalent. How much is that? $600,000. This is the $1.2 million that Gaston talked to us about this morning. The husband has six, the wife has six. But in our previous example, the husband gave it to the wife, and now we only have one under the simple will. Now we have two exemption equivalents. Now our costs are lower, our tax are lower, is lower, and the family gets $1,983,000. If you can't remember this number, write it down. What did the family get under the simple will? $1,641,000. What have we done? We've saved $342,000 over the simple will. You say, but yes, I had to go to the attorney, though, and it cost me $1,000 to draw that. Now, this is a little bit different than the simple will that Gaston talked, two-pager that Gaston talked about earlier today. Would you spend $1,000 to save $342,000? I'll do it every day of the week. And Sunday, too. But the family now gets $1,983,000 based upon our assumptions that we're working through. Well, let's go back, or go forward. Remember the financial statement. This is the kind of thing that I work with on a regular basis, and the things that I'm involved with, is that I want to know what constitutes that entire state. We've already looked at the financial statement. Do you recall this little piece of stock? Here's a piece of stock, ABC Corporation. It could be Exxon, it could be Texaco, it could be InSearch, it could be anything. But here's a block of stock. The couple paid $20,000 for it a number of years ago. It's currently worth $100,000. Maybe prior to October 19th, it was worth $120,000. But still, they've got quite a bit of appreciation in this block of stock. It could be land. We're currently looking at the stock. It's generating 2%. If you had $100,000 in passbook savings, what could you do? 5.5? Well, why not? Let's move this $100,000 stock over there. We're 65. We want some more income. Why not move that $100,000 block of stock down to the local savings and loan, other than the fact that there may be illiquid?
Don't you have to pay income tax on that $100,000?
So it'd be $80,000. You've got appreciation of $80,000. What do you pay? Capital gains tax on the appreciation. Well, I just hold on to the stock. Isn't that what we say we'd normally do? We're locked in. I'm locked in. CPA says just hold on to it. Well, is that necessarily true? If we're going to exercise our stewardship like we talked about earlier, here might be a way we could do it. Take the same block of stock, $100,000 current value, this is on your form, 2% return, $2,000 annual return, cost basis $20,000, appreciation $80,000. If the individual sells the stock, they'll pay capital gains tax on the $80,000 or $22,400 in taxes. But let's consider this. Suppose the couple transfers the asset, and it's important that you understand that. We transfer the asset to a charitable trust agreement. The trust becomes the seller, not the individual. As many times as I've said that over and over, I have inevitably have someone, I will every year have someone come and say, you know that block of stock or that piece of land? I sold it, now here's the cash, let's put it in the trust. It's too late. You move it to the trust, deed it to the trust, gift it to the trust prior to a sale. The trust becomes the seller, not the individual. So now we have the block of stock in the trust sells the stock. We avoid 100% of the capital gains tax. We keep the full integrity of the asset working for us within the trust. So the number one benefit is that we can sell the asset and pay no capital gains tax, number one. That is a current benefit. Number two, we can usually increase the income. If it's been generating 2 and we sell it and reinvest the corpus, and say we invest this at, say, 10%, this couple, I'm going to show you two illustrations. This couple says we'd like to have 5%. That's 3% more than they were receiving. Now, we can have 5, we can have 7, we can have 8. This illustrates with 5. So automatically, we're increasing their income by $3,000 a year from this one asset. Second benefit, increase the income. Third benefit, because at some point in the future, this will belong to charity. The charity of our choice, or charities of our choice. We can divide it. Like the couple we looked at earlier today, they divided it among 3 different charities. Because at some point in the future, this will belong to charity, Uncle Sam says, you have made a gift. It's a future gift. The gift will take place at death when both husband and wife are deceased. But because you have made a future gift, I will give you a current income tax deduction. What's the value of that deduction? Well, they go through, the short of the long is, they go through this big, long process of saying the present value of your future gift, they discount it back, is worth X number of dollars. And they'd go to their big tables, and it so happens that this charitable gift today is worth $40,000. And that's your income tax deduction. What does an income tax deduction do to your 1040? If you have a $40,000 gift to put on Schedule AB of your 1040, what happens to your income tax? Pardon? It goes down. By how much? Not 40. Your taxable rate. If you're in the 33% tax rate, multiply 33% times that. We're assuming here 28%. So their actual tax savings, number three, is $11,449. That's brand new money. If you're making quarterly payments to the uncle for your income taxes, that may be one quarterly payment you don't make. If you've already made it, you may get it back in the form of a tax return when you file prior to April the 15th. Brand new money. So we get, number one, we avoid the capital gains tax. Number two, increase the income. Number three, get an income tax deduction, current benefits. Thirdly and fourthly and so on, we can do with working with life. We could invest this at 10% over the long term. This couple has a 24-year life expectancy. So let's suppose that we can invest that at 10% over the long term. And the couple only asks for 5. What happens to the other 5%? It goes back, someone said earlier, it goes to the charity. No. It goes back within the trust and it compounds tax-free within the trust. What's happening to it? It's now growing at the rate of 5% a year. See the arrows? They're getting longer. If this couple lives 24 years, their trust compounding at 5% will have grown to $307,000. They get 5% of that figure. They participate in the growth of that asset. So we have a hedge against inflation, if you will. Well, what happens if you take more? And I'm just going to spend 30 seconds on this. Instead of taking 5, suppose we take 8. If it's invested at 10, and is paying the couple 8, it's only compounding at what? 2%. It's not growing quite as fast. But the other thing is that if the couple takes more out during their lifetime, they get a smaller income tax deduction. That makes sense, doesn't it? Uncle Sam says, if you're going to take more out of the trust that you're going to give away, then I'm going to give you a smaller gift value. And so you can compare the two. The previous was $40,000 charitable deduction. This deduction is $24,000. So the more we take out, the smaller our charitable deduction. All the other benefits are the same. Increase the income, bypass the capital gains tax, everything else remains the same. Well, we're not going to take time to look at these slides in the interest of time. Someone says, what if I sold the asset, paid the tax? Does that make sense? So let's compare the two. What if I sold the asset, paid the tax, and invested the difference? Where would I be? That's only honest. That's only an honest way to look at things. Same asset, earning the same income, same appreciation, but we sell it, we pay the tax, $22,400. Leaving after tax $77,600. Suppose you invest that now at 10%. What's your annual income? $7,760. Is that right? After tax, because you're going to pay tax on that as you earn it, but you accumulate all of that after tax for your life. At the end of your life, you will have total principal right here, and after tax income of $384,000. But suppose we do the trust instead. We put it in the trust. How much capital gains tax do we pay? Nothing. We keep the entire $100,000 working for us. Suppose we invest that at 10% but only pay the couple 8. How much is the couple getting here? $8,000 a year. What are they getting here? $7,760. But we also picked up a tax savings, remember? That's real money. We really have $6,962 to invest into the same time period. You already looked at the bottom number, haven't you? Into the same time period, we have total tax savings and after-tax income of $407,000, almost $408,000, compared to $384,000, plus what? You have made a gift. You have exercised, if you will, your stewardship beyond your life, because after you're gone is when this gift is made possible, not before. As long as you're living, you're enjoying the benefit of that. At death, it belongs to the charity. Where does that money come from? Is that funny numbers? Did I just make those up because they look good? No, it comes from right here. If you take this $22,400 that you're going to write a check to Uncle Sam for when you sell that asset, if you had that $22,400 to put in the bank and compound for your life expectancy, you'd have enough to make that gift and pay the difference in these two bottom numbers. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes it may pay people to consider a charitable trust, not only for tax purposes, but also to exercise your stewardship. We won't take time to look at some of these. Now, where does that fit in? The same estate, $1 million, what did we do? We gifted $100,000 worth of stock into a charitable trust agreement. It happens to be called a unit trust, not to be confused with E.F. Hutton's advertisement unit trust, which they advertise in the paper. This is a charitable remainder unit trust. The trust sold the asset, pays the income to husband and wife for life. Husband passes away, he still sets up his credit shelter, he still sets up this qualified terminable interest property trust. Surviving spouse has his or her portion. Invasion privileges to this, within reason. I think I told Homer one time that Homer Price, who's with us here from Mart, that if something were to happen to Prudy, he couldn't go marry someone else and take her on a trip to Acapulco and buy her a new Rolls Royce or anything like that, but he can certainly get to the principal if he needs it. You can't just go blow it. But it's available for you if you need it. Invasion privileges to these. Surviving spouse has his or her portion. Charitable trust, still paying income to the surviving spouse after the husband's death. Can the wife or husband invade this corpus? Answer to that is no. It is an irrevocable trust. Or if you live down in Harlingen, it's irrevocable. Take your pick. It's irrevocable. We can't get back to the principal. So we won't do what the fellow in Red Oak that I visited with not long ago that said, if we can avoid estate tax, probate, and administrative costs, I'd like to put my whole estate right over here. Wouldn't want you to do that. Would not want you to do that. Because you cannot get back to the corpus. That's why we're only talking here in terms of 10%. We can get to any of this, but not to this. Income, all day long. Income. Every month, every quarter, semi-annually, annually, however you want it. Income. How much does the family get? $1,202,000. What did they get under the simple will? $1,641,000. Do you remember what they got under the credit shelter and the QTIP trust, no charitable trust? $1,009,000. What are they getting now? $2,020,000 plus what? We've made a gift to charity. If that doesn't turn you on, or as Brother Hogan said one time, if that doesn't light your fire, your wood's wet. If that doesn't light your fire, your wood's wet. Brother R.N. Hogan. Well, let's look at this. Yes, question.
Recently invested pretty fair sized sum of money in prepaid insurance. I was told I could borrow from that insurance without paying tax, but I'll never pay it back. A or A?
That's correct under current tax law. Now, whether you'll be able to do that next year or the next year, I don't know. Congress is looking at it closely. They're looking at, I call it revenue enhancement. They're looking for any way they can to tax. And no, this is not an indictment on the life insurance companies, because they have, but they have taunted this and hung it out before the IRS and advertised it. And the IRS has said, wait a minute, let's take a look at that. So right now, that's correct. Here's another thing. Some people say, well, what if I put this in this trust and something happens to me prematurely, I die, then my family will have lost this $100,000. We've already shown where they get more. But that's true. They will lose this. If you're in the 50% estate tax bracket, how much of this have they lost? $50,000. Well, if we're really concerned, and it's really our desire to put more money into the hands of our children, although I would want to argue that point, but that's really our desire, then there's a way in which we can take the tax savings. One reason that most of us will not buy life insurance is because we don't have the cash flow. Now, I've worked with people whose annual incomes is $500,000 a year. They need to buy some life insurance to cover liquidity needs and tax needs. But where am I going to get the income? You would think if you had $500,000 annual income, surely you would have enough money to buy some life insurance. How many of you have enough to live off of and you just continue to stack some away? There's a few people. There are exceptions to that. But most of us live right up to what we bring home. We've just shown you a way in which we're going to increase your income. If you're so disposed, there's a way in which you can take the extra income which this trust will generate for you, transfer it into something called an irrevocable life insurance trust using the annual exclusion. What in the world is the annual exclusion? How much money can you give away to your children not paying any tax? $10,000 per donee, per donor. Husband can give 10, wife can give 10. So between the two of you, you can give away 20,000. Barney Alsbrook here could give each one of us $10,000 apiece and not pay any tax if he were so disposed. You second that motion if he starts up here on this rope. That's exactly what we're talking about here, is you're using your annual exclusion, your $10,000 per donee per donor, but in this case, we're only adding $6,000 a year. This couple only has one child, it works. They make a gift to the child, to the First National Bank, Abilene, or anywhere. What does Barney do on the other hand? He picks up the phone, he says to his child or his son or his daughter, if you go get that money, that's the last you're going to get from me. Or you go get that money, I'm going to break your leg. Whatever it is you have to do to convince them to leave the money alone. 30 days later, it's still there. I wonder why. The trustee calls back and says, Barney, the kids didn't come pick up the money. Barney says to the trustee, purchase some life insurance on my life. And we have what is called then a crummy trust. Not a crummy way to do it. It's a guy named Crummy made it possible for us to do it. C-R-U-M-M-E-Y, crummy. We have a crummy trust, an irrevocable life insurance trust. We take the extra $6,000 every year that we earn from our trust, place it in the trust. The trust purchases life insurance on mom and dad. At the second death, it comes to the family tax-free. We can put more in there. If we've got two kids, husband and wife, we can put $40,000 a year into that trust. How much life insurance, Nick, would a $40,000 a year buy for 5 years? A bunch. It would buy a bunch. We did a trust last year. with a guy that did not believe in life insurance. He had canceled $400,000 worth of life insurance because he said, I don't like it. When we got through, when we began, his federal estate tax liability was $4.5 million. When we finished, his tax liability was $350,000, but in the process, we purchased $2.5 million worth of life insurance. Let me tell you, Don Sargent in Dallas brings me a lot of clients. I didn't get a dime. Well, I did too. Out of that sale of life insurance, $2.5 million, I got a Swiss knife. Don remembered me at Christmas last year and gave me a Swiss knife. But he brings a lot of clients to see me because we can reduce their tax liability, increase their current income, provide more for the family, if that's your desire, after tax. Family now gets $2,086,000. Question? Yes, ma'am. Question is, what if the husband and wife are not insurable? Good question. One of the things before you do this, we would take a test with somebody like Nick or Pat Agnew that I saw come in here just a minute ago that sells life insurance. You get a binder. You find out if mom and dad are insurable before we go through with the process. But you'll be surprised at the number of companies that they may not sell life insurance to the mother by herself or to dad by himself, but between the two of you, they will sell you some life insurance because they're insuring two lives, not one, and they're not going to pay until both of you are deceased. So there are companies that have what is called second-to-die policies or second-death policies, and you'd be surprised what you could do. But to answer your question further, suppose you're not insurable. You can't get any. By the way, the $2.5 million life insurance, the wife had cancer. She had had a radical mastectomy 2 years before. They rated her, even though she was 68, they rated her as though she were 81 or 2. But she survived her 3 years. They went back and lowered her insurance premiums. So you'd be surprised what life insurance companies are doing. There are 41,000 people today living in the United States 100 years of age or older. People are living longer. They're living healthier. Insurance companies are insuring people up to 85. Yes, question here.
If you have more than one child, can you give more than one $10,000?
You can multiply.
$30,000.
Three children, $30,000.
Per donor.
Per donee. If you're married, your wife can join you. You can give $60,000. Okay? Yes, ma'am. You had another question.
Well, all right.
Do you have grandchildren? I'm going to anticipate your question. Do you have grandchildren?
I have grandchildren. Okay. I have a daughter who is an adult.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But that's an insurance policy. We are the owners. Is that good?
Well, you've already bought the life insurance? Well, did you buy it? We'd have to talk maybe a little bit afterwards. Let me see how you got it constructed. Did you buy the insurance? Need to know whether or not you bought it on your life. And the policy's worth $100 or you paid
$100? Paid
$100. Okay. You've made a gift in excess of the $10,000. That's yours.
That's mine, but it's on her life.
Okay, well, no, you don't have a problem then if you've got it. It's on her life?
It's on her life.
She's the owner.
No, I'm owner.
You're the owner of the policy.
Well,
Nick?
The advantage of that situation, as I understand it, is that she can draw income by way of loans.
The owner can.
With no income tax.
The owner can.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well,
if she's the owner of the policy, if her daughter predeceases her, that $100,000 is back in her estate.
Right. But the income tax is an advantage.
Yes. And there's some other things, might be some other things you'd want to consider, and we might want to talk about that right after. Yes, sir.
Well, what if we choose a wife where you have a single freeze tax shelter sort of type of thing like insurance? Who should be the owner of the policy? Who should be the beneficiary?
That's going to depend on what your circumstances are. I don't know that there's a pat answer for that. The question is, what if you have a single premium life insurance policy? Who would it be best to have as the owner of the policy, and et cetera? It's going to depend on the circumstances. Whoever the owner is, or the beneficiary is, whoever controls that, or has the right to change the beneficiary, that's whose estate it's going to be included in. Okay? We'll come back, and maybe we'll spend some time and work through your situation. I want to show you this, and maybe we'll stop it because it's 4:30. Just look at the bottom number. And you don't believe it, do you? This is started out with the same amount, but now we have $5,280,000 to the family. And we have $2,600,000 to the charity. How in the world did you get there? Well, what's important is, number one, we've increased the length of time. Remember, this couple had a 24-year life expectancy? This is their death right here, 2013. But what have we done? We've added 20 years to it. The thing that Gaston or someone mentioned earlier today, a lot of people say, I don't want to give it all to my children at one time, that $1,600,000 or that $1,900,000. I'll give it to them over a period of time. All we've done here is give this to them over a period of 20 years. After the death of the second spouse. We've used some other trust agreements, something called a lead trust. Somebody looked at that and said, boy, lead trust, I like that, L-E-A-D. It is a lead trust. We work through the same process, but this is where the surviving spouse says, at my death, I give something to my children now when I die. They're already going to get dad's credit shelter trust. I give something to the children now. Instead of $1,600,000 under the simple, they get $1,200,000. That's a little less. But we also give them some more, but we put it in the form of a lead trust and say, you can have this 20 years after I'm gone. Or you can have it in 5 years, 10 years, 15, and 20 years over a period of time. But over a period of 20 years, you can have this corpus. But meanwhile, before you get that corpus, I'm going to continue my stewardship to the church, to Abilene Christian, to Bowles Home, to Foster Home, or whatever. I'm going to give some income to those organizations that I have been helping all along. But when I'm at the end of the 20-year period, I will stop the income and give you the principal. Meanwhile, we add something to the trust that Mom and Dad set up during their life. They set it up while Mom and Dad were living. Mom continued to get the income. At Mom's death, we continue it for 20 years. Not only do we continue it, we add something to it so that the children get an annual income stream for 20 years. They get something at Mom's death. They get an annual income stream for 20 years. At the end of 20 years, their income stops. Then what do they get? They get this corpus. Well, you're saying you just stretched that out too far. That's 20 years. That's $5.2 million. That's right. What did you rather have? And we want to talk about the present value of money. If I offer Barney this $20, I say, Barney, you can have it today, or I'll give it to you 20 years from now. When would you rather have it?
I'd rather have it 20 years from now.
You'd rather have it 20 years from now. How many of you would do what Barney's done? How many of you take it today? I'd take it today. Why? 20 years from now, how much is this going to be worth?
Dollar?
Maybe. I'll spend it today. Well, that's all we're doing. We're saying that this is future value, and that's how this has grown. So let's discount it back. What is the real value of this $5,200,000? Present value, right here. Family, $2,200,000. Charity, $981,000. What did the couple get under a simple will? $1,641,000 compared to $2,200,000. How much did the charity get, or how much did the gospel get, or how much did the Lord's cause get under the simple will? Nothing. How much do they get here? $981,000. Let me tell you, places like ACU, they'll put your name on a building for something like that. How much did the government get under the simple will? $808,000. How much do they get now? $231,000. Now, folks, I'd rather do this than play Monopoly. This is more fun, and I enjoy it. I enjoy talking to people about it. This is my ministry. It's what I do to help people help the cause of Christ. I've enjoyed every minute with you. I'll stay afterward as long as you want to talk, but it's 4:30 and you're dismissed.
Appreciate that.
Oh, listen.
Great deal.
Thank you.